Star Wars fans get to re-edit A New Hope, Digitas takes web series on the road, and United Airlines breaks guitars. All this and more on This Week in Media. Hey, boys and girls, this is Tim Street filling in for Daisy Whitney on This Week in Media, and we have quite the crew for you today. And leading off with that, I'll go to Brett Register, executive producer and creator of The Crew. Hi, Brett.
Hey, how are you?
Doing well, doing well. Where are you coming to us from today?
I'm nestled deep in Santa Monica, and it's not a cold day, but I'm nestled in an ADR booth at the Big Fantastic offices.
Nice,
trying to get
nice.
The best sound possible.
Very good, very good. And we also have coming to us Zach Louis. Zach, are you there?
Yes, I'm here.
Zach, where are you coming from today?
I'm coming from my humble abode in Columbia, Missouri, nestled within Middle Missouri at the University of Missouri, Mizzou.
Let's move on to Brett Wilson at Tube Mogul. Brett, are you there?
Hi, Jim. I'm here.
All right. So for those people that don't know, tell us what Tube Mogul is.
We have a service for content creators of video where you can upload a video once to us and super syndicate that video to all the places where video is being watched, and then we'll aggregate the stats into a single dashboard. So it's syndication and analytics.
Syndication and analytics, great tool. All right. So Daisy asked me to fill in for her this week and next week. In fact, she sent me to the spa this week. So I just got back from the desert. It was awesome. So that was kind of my treat for. I'm kidding. She didn't really. But she's telling everybody that she did. So the one thing Daisy said is we can't talk just about online video. So with that in mind, I want to bring up a story that just came out today. Nickelodeon celebrates the 10th birthday of a marketing icon, SpongeBob SquarePants. Brett Register, you
yes.
Care to chat about SpongeBob at all? What are your feelings on SpongeBob?
I've never got down with SpongeBob. My roommate's a big fan, and when I first moved to LA, I worked for Nickelodeon, and I saw a lot of it. I think I just missed it as far as demographic. I was a big Ren and Stimpy fan, so I like the animators the same, I think. And I'm really excited for them because I love Nickelodeon. Working for them was a lot of fun, but I can't say I've ever watched
amazing. One of the amazing things to me about SpongeBob is that they have over 700 licensee partners on the brand. I mean, think about that. That's over 700 deals on people paying them money to make SpongeBob washcloths, sunglasses, swimming apparel, all kinds of SpongeBob stuff. And it's really interesting to see a brand that has exploded like that and is embraced by so many people all across the world. Zach, do we have you back?
I am back.
Zach,
don't
you
ask.
Okay, are you a SpongeBob fan?
Am I a SpongeBob fan?
Yeah.
I suppose. I mean, Nickelodeon. I honestly, if I'm going to go the Nickelodeon route, I want to talk more about Doug.
Yeah.
Nice.
Well, we were talking about...
Right.
About SpongeBob because it's his 10th birthday and he seems to be doing pretty well on the marketing side. Brett Wilson, you have anything to add?
Yeah, I think SpongeBob is the most annoying cartoon of all time. I've got a 3-year-old little boy, and no matter what you put on, he wants to watch SpongeBob. So I'm not sure why. It reminds me of the Fred phenomenon in online video, where you just have this super annoying personality that appeals to young men. And so I think this just goes to show that that women truly are superior somehow, and that young boys' brains don't develop as fast as young ladies.
You had to do that. You had to go and bring online video into this one. I promised Daisy
somehow
it wouldn't be about. So, okay, with that in mind, then I'm moving on to the next story.
That's my universe, baby.
There
it's
you
inevitably
go.
Gonna spiral down to online video.
I think so, but that brings us to the next story that popped up today. Battle over performance tax. I don't know if any of you have been paying attention to this, but some of the record labels are having a battle between radio broadcasters and performances, and so they're looking at taxing this. Have any of you been paying attention to this?
I have a lot.
That's
of my brother's in the music industry, and I have a lot of friends I grew up with in the industry, and they're all kind of not super excited about it. It's kind of, I don't know when radio stopped being a marketing tool to the labels. I don't know if this is exactly what the tax is entailing, but I mean, I know a lot of them see, you know, radio and especially Pandora, not to go to the online side so fast, but it's a huge marketing tool for them, and they just feel like the record labels are continuing to put big walls in between what, you know, what is marketing their band the best, and so they're a little worried about the state of things. And
well, it does seem that like the record labels are trying to do anything that they can to monetize, and you know, in terms of the different radio stations that are out there on the internet, it just kind of, you know, looks like the last nail in their coffin. I don't see how they're going to be able to survive.
Yeah, I would be very sad to see them go. I personally have learned of a lot of bands just using Pandora, and I just think it. I just hate that the labels are not willing to, you know, grow with what's going on online. And you know, I mean, most bands make no money off the CD. That's basically just goes out of the label. So they're trying to get as big of an audience as possible to make money off the tour and things of that nature. And they've been seeing a lot of good results from things like Pandora and Last.fm and all that. And it would be really sad to see all that go away. Plus, just selfishly, I love it on my iPhone.
What do you think? I mean, do you think that record labels are going to go away? Or, I mean, how do you see this thing ending up?
I mean, I don't think... I think record labels are not going to go away, but I think they're going to fight till the bitter end to make as much money as possible until they realize that all their major artists are leaving. Like, I mean, obviously with Nine Inch Nails and Radiohead giving their CDs away, that's obviously a big step towards the idea of just online distribution with Facebook and MySpace and Twitter and all that. They can gain an audience online and sell their CDs without the record label. So I think once the record label really starts to see a downfall in sales is when they'll finally realize what a big marketing tool things like Pandora and that are. But maybe too late. Hopefully not.
You know, it's interesting because, you know, for some people, they're artists and they don't want to be businessmen. They just want to make their music and have somebody else shepherd it, get it out there, and make the money for them. I think most artists would prefer that, whereas there are other artists who enjoy being the control freak and enjoy taking part of that business and running with it and developing the business side of it. Zach, you've had to develop a lot of your own business, but yet you've also partnered with Revision 3.
Right.
Can you talk about that?
Well, I mean, when you're producing a web series online, you basically are starting from the ground up when you don't have a certain amount of namesake as other creators do in the game. That being said, what we did with Bottles, Blends, and Brews was literally just making the show and on the first episode creating relationships with different video distributors, different people on the web, and then pushing. Daisy covered it in one of her articles. Revision 3 picked it up on the beta lineup, and it's just been, you know, just using that fire from then on. So, I mean, still kicking out episodes and still having fun, and that's what I do.
So, Brett Wilson, do you see a lot of musicians coming to you, and are they using TubeMogul to get their stuff out there?
Yeah, it's like Zach said, small artists are using us to go out and develop a fan base so that they can one day maybe be signed. But my question, and maybe you guys can help me with this, is why is Congress dealing with this? Why isn't this a dispute between record labels and radio stations? Our Congress has an economy to deal with, nuclear proliferation. Like, why did lawmakers get involved in this issue, which seems like a business issue?
Well, I know that Congress has been involved in radio issues before over the years. I mean, there was the whole payola thing back in the day of paying to get your record played. So I don't know how that factors into this, but I guess there aren't any steroid issues in baseball at the moment, so they've got to do something.
Yeah, it's kind of a shame, though. It seems like they need to be busy doing other things, and we need to let businesses work these disputes out among themselves.
Cool. Moving on to the next story, re-edit Star Wars. This is kind of interesting to me. Star Wars Uncut is calling for all the Star Wars fanatics to unleash their filmmaking skills on A New Hope, but in 15-second increments. Now, so what they're trying to do, or they've actually done, is they've invited people to take part in recreating Star Wars A New Hope and posting it online.
And like shot by shot?
Shot by shot. And so they've already started doing this. And I guess every scene has been assigned already, but if somebody doesn't turn it in time, then you can apply for that, and maybe you'll get that scene. I wonder if they'll try this again with another Star Wars film, depending on how this one comes out. But my question to you guys is, what do you think about all this mashing up? As a content creator, how do you feel about that with somebody taking your property and redoing it?
I think that when you're a content creator and you're creating something, I think just the fact that someone else wants to take your work and adapt their time and their love into something that you've created or a project that you've helped with, that is the feeling that comes with it is awesome. I mean, I'm not one to ever jump on the, oh, don't take my work, don't use my work, don't download my podcast unless it's from iTunes. Like, on all the uploads that we do through Vidler and Vimeo, you can download the raw file right from there. I think that creating content for the web is you need to be free and open source almost in a way. And I think that with LucasArts doing this with Star Wars, I think that's cool. Like, I would love to see different shot-by-shot renditions of A New Hope. And if they put their marketing work behind
now,
it and like
I don't
it on
know
their own,
I don't know
awesome.
That this is I don't know that this is sanctioned by them.
Oh, okay. Well, let me just say, if they condone it, if they say this is cool, I like this in the end, if it's okay, like if when the Indiana Jones shot by shot thing went up, they didn't take that down, like they didn't like copyright storm that. So if they okay something and they let it go, then I'll be happy for it and happy for them. But if there were a big enough of a fervor to recreate the stuff that I do shot by shot, I would be like, yes, thank you.
Yeah, it does seem like the whole Lucas brand is a little bit more open to this type of thing. I mean, you take a look at Chad Vader online video series.
Right.
They seem to have embraced that, and I guess the guy who did the voice of Chad Vader got hired by Lucas to do the voice of Darth Vader for some of their animated series.
That's awesome.
Now, Brett Register, your show, The Crew, is kind of a mashup in a way, isn't it?
Yeah, I mean, we definitely take a lot from both The Office and Star Trek. And our show, it's kind of like a blending of the two. And as far as this goes, like I was watching it earlier, I think it's awesome. Like, if you can create a property that people care about enough to spend the time to do this, and you have enough passionate fans to use their resources to make this, I think that's awesome. I see LucasArts as kind of embracing this, especially with the Star Wars fan films and licensing a lot of those things out. And I think that's really cool. I mean, the fans are obviously so passionate about it. It would be a real shame if they kind of turned their back on it. I'm interested to see how this whole thing comes out, because some are definitely better than others. Some of the 15-second clips I saw were just someone in their bedroom with like an IKEA lamp. So I'm hoping people try harder for some of them. And I hope they come asking me for Empire
Strikes Back. It does seem like you could spend your whole life just working on Star Wars reenactment videos.
Yeah, definitely.
Or at least you spend your whole life watching them. Brett Wilson, are you seeing any statistics in the growth of this type of stuff? I mean, in the video game world, there's what's the channel, Machinima, that is a pretty big source of videos on YouTube?
Yeah.
Oh, Machinima.
Me too. One thing we see is that there's a subset of people out there that are going to mash up media and brands no matter what you do. So if you're a media company and you can get ahead of it and you can control those mashups, you're probably going to have less piracy than you would otherwise. So we did one study where we looked at networks that were the most pirated. And in fact, the networks that had the tightest controls on their content were the ones that were the most pirated. So beyond giving Star Wars fans an outlet to kind of, you know, creative outlet and a way to mobilize the troops, this is a way to actually control their intellectual property.
So that's interesting. You're saying that by giving people the freedom to play with it and mash it up, you actually find it pirated less.
Yeah. An analogy would be you're going to a meeting and you're the one that brings the agenda. You can't control what's being said, but you control the agenda. This is the same thing. People are going to mash up your content and do things you may not want them to do, but if you can control the conversation, it may end up better than otherwise if you don't give people an outlet to do it.
There you go. Well, moving on to our next story here. This one is about media as well. Media agency Digitas is taking things on the road. This kind of stems from the New Front web video showcase that it hosted, where they showed different web videos and to different agencies and media buyers, and now they're kind of taking that process on the road. What do you guys think about this in terms of, you know, getting online videos out there and showcasing them to advertisers and media buyers around the country? Let me go with Brett Wilson.
I think it's great to see an agency actually commit to this. I mean, usually what we're seeing is agencies are spending money in video out of their experimental budget. So Digitas is ahead of the game. I keep hearing this year being called the year of branded content. I think they're really well positioned, and I think they've made a commitment to the space. I mean, that being said, there's a lot of experimentation that needs to be done because we know that episodic content largely doesn't work, at least in terms of retaining an audience. So I'm glad that they're doing it. I think we got to get a lot smarter on what's going to work best for advertisers.
Brett Register, have you been putting together any tools for your show and getting it out there?
You mean in regards to branded content?
Well, in terms of, as Digitas moves out, they're showing different upfront presentations, like trailers and things like that, to market the different films. Have you done anything like that with your show?
I mean, definitely, we're putting together a lot as we move into pre-production on season 2. And we've been approaching some advertisers, but it's kind of a strange world out there right now as advertisers try to figure out the online space and slowly shuffle their feet into it. And we've been finding that a lot of people are very interested in finding a way to use the show that we create to market their product. I'm trying to think of an intelligent way to say this. It's basically like we've been approached by a couple of companies to make essentially a 30-second viral commercial using the characters in our show to market their brand, and then they in turn would push our show. And it's kind of like this, I don't want to say experimental, but it's kind of, for me, it was kind of weird because I'm like, well, we can just put your product in the show. I'm like, it's in space, but we'll find a way to make it work. And they're more interested in these little kind of like snippets, and I'm interested to see what Digitas has in regards to that. I mean, we've definitely worked with Blip on our show, and I know that they've been doing a lot with advertisers, and they got kind of Starburst on to, for us, and some other brands, which made it look good for us because we have these big brands. But I'm not sure exactly how it all worked out monetarily for everybody, but I'm hoping definitely there's a standard that comes together and people start to find a way for everybody to be happy and marketers to get what they want in return. I mean, I was watching something on Hulu.
It's interesting.
Go ahead.
It's interesting what you're talking about there. In terms of what happened last week here in L.A., we had the L.A. TV Fest put on by NatPe. And there were agencies there, there were media buyers there, as well as content creators. And one of the things that the advertising folks were really driving home was that the content creators don't understand their world. And so there definitely needs to be a mix of education, both on the media buyer side as to, you know, what types of shows are out there, but then also on the content creator side. Advertisers, media buyers, and the agency type folks, they really want reach and they want to be able to control the message. And for a lot of us content creators, that creates some problems. One of the things that they did say in terms of the branded entertainment is that they want to control the message from the beginning. They want to control the product and how the story comes together, how the scripts work. They want to work with content producers to develop that story and get it out there. Zach, you've been working with Revision 3. Have you had any situations where you've had to work directly with a sponsor to get a certain message out?
Well, I know that when we were doing sponsorships with a website called Brandon New, that we settled on an ad agreement where it wasn't personal host, when you speak during the show as if it were, you know, part of the plug, which a lot of the podcasts they have a whole different new format of doing things like that. On our side, we actually just cut a 15 to 30 second commercial on our own and just plugged it within the show, and different rates come with different advertising packages when you're doing things like that. And I think that is probably the easiest and most standard plug-in of the shows that you do. And as Brett was saying, you can he can make a skit or make a viral commercial or things like that. Some advertisers like different things. I know that we just signed an affiliate deal with Squarespace. And in our future episodes, we're going to be incorporating some, as he said, some sort of viral advertising things. I know that my buddies on different shows like Film Riot, they've been shooting their own commercials for Netflix and Squarespace. And they've been making skits. They've been making their own little advertisements out of everything versus the, go here, or, let's plug in a voice over here. So I think that the interactive advertising is probably, in my opinion, is going to be the most beneficial. And this is what advertisers and different brands are going to be looking to do. Like, they're going to be, let's get these guys to bring their personalities into our brand and sell it that way.
Well, let me talk to you a little bit more about that. In terms of creating these commercials, did you have to run them by the advertiser first and
that
get
is,
their blessing?
That's the kicker. When you're working with the company that's giving you money to represent their brand, they need to approve copy. And if you can't, you know, give them something, give them a solid like back, like I'm talking to other content producers out there, you need to be able to show them that you are the professional. They're going to, you know, different big brands are going to places like NBC. They're going to big companies, and they're spending their money on big places that have a definite reputation. You have to show them that you can do the same thing there. And so when you're a random guy making a random show with a random crew for a random company, you need to be able to show and have sort of a background and a portfolio to prove that your copy and everything, all the things that you're going to be plugging into your show, is going to be legit, for lack of a better word, legit.
Yeah, the advertising people that were at LA TV Fest were also talking about make goods. And so if for some reason they struck a deal with an independent content producer and they didn't get the amount of views that they wanted, or they didn't get the outcome that they wanted to know that that content creator could do what's called a make good. Like when NBC did a bunch of advertising on the Olympics, and the Olympics weren't viewed as much as they thought they were going to be, they had to do make goods and show other commercials for those brands to kind of pay them back and get them the value that they had purchased. So
that's an interesting concept.
Yeah, it's something to where, you know, as independents, we've got to figure out a way to make sure that we can do make goods for these people. Otherwise, they're not going to want to do business with us.
Which is not good. We want to keep business here.
Yeah. Brett, you had something?
Yeah. What I've been hearing is one of the interesting things Digitas is doing is they're not doing CPM-based deals. Because CPM-based deals, that's where a lot of branded content deals go wrong because the advertisers aren't getting the reach that they want. So I've talked to a couple content creators that have been recipients of these Digitas deals, and it's a flat fee. And not only are you producing a piece of content, but in many cases, like Beat TV was sponsored by Holiday Inn Express. Beat TV also blogged on Holiday Inn Express's site. They also threw a Holiday Inn Express party. So Digitas was effective in convincing the advertiser that it's not just about reach. It's about highly targeting a group of people that are more likely than others to consume your product. And so that's one of the things I'm excited about that they're doing is they're not just doing the deals, they're educating advertisers that you're not going to get TV-sized reach in online video, but you are going to get more targeted, more engaged audiences.
And that's really where the value of online video comes into play is that we are reaching. You know, you look at network television, you may be getting, you know, 7 million people, but how many of those 7 million people are really interested in what you're advertising to them?
Right.
Are you seeing anyone going after those types of statistics?
Yeah, I think where it will go, at least where I hope it will go, is away from views and more towards viewed minutes. So, you know, who cares how many people clicked play and then went away? How long did people watch cumulatively? Because I think that's where online video starts to compete with the promise of TV.
Yeah, absolutely. Now, go ahead.
I think that with what you were saying about how our audience is almost more valuable than the 7 million they may bring on TV, I think that advertisers, everyone needs to come to the realization that they can spend incredibly less amounts of money for people that are actively engaging in these programs. When you have someone that seeks out, someone that downloads something off iTunes, browses to the YouTube, find something through Twitter, et cetera, et cetera. When you have someone that seeks out the content versus flipping the channel on TV, you have an automatically more engaged audience there. And I know different places like VaynerMedia are getting they're getting companies like Gillette coming to them, and they're saying, listen, we want you to work with us. And they're helping them and plug them through our young, through our internet, through our media savvy people. And all these people are going to be engaged in these different products. So when companies like Squarespace say, I have an online website business. I have a WYSIWYG builder that builds this, and I want to sell it to these people. Instead of advertising on the Super Bowl or advertising on TV or something, they're advertising through all of these podcasts with people that watch podcasts, that like podcasts, that want to make podcasts possibly, or blog or whatever, and they're going to go to these services. It's targeted niche advertising. It's not as much money, and I think it's more beneficial to the brand and to the people that are advertising it.
Yeah, I wonder when those dollars are going to flip over.
It's coming. Yeah. You have to just, I mean, like, we, all of us here, I mean, we're all paying our dues. We're, you know, this is what I do as a job. This is what I do for a living. But all of it's coming. I mean, we definitely, with the work that we do on Bottles, Buns, and Brews and all the different shows and all the different, we're writing a new series. Like, we're basically, it's an investment. It's sort of a future-proof thing. The dollars are coming. The eyeballs are coming. Everything is coming. Everyone just needs to sit tight and keep doing their thing.
Now, do you follow Gary Vaynerchuk quite a bit?
Well, I've worked with Gary on a few different things. We've made some like ridiculous podcasts with each other, some episodes and stuff. He's a cool guy, and I really enjoy what they're doing over there at their VaynerMedia. It's pretty badass.
So, I mean, Gary, he talks about wine, but then he also has Wine Library, which is, right. Is it the largest wine site out there?
I have no numbers on that.
Yeah, I'm not sure how big it is, but I mean, he's really using his own videos to market the website.
It's great. I mean, that's what it takes. It takes that kind of work and that kind of thing to do to sell your product or to put the word out there. I mean, it's just part of the game.
Yeah, yeah. Well, moving on to our next story is about online video. Because we've already talked about things that aren't online video. Most online videos found via blogs, according to TubeMogul. Brett Wilson, care to talk about this?
Sure, thanks. Sorry, Daisy, for talking about video. We looked at 35 million streams of video, and for each stream, we looked at where that stream came from. And what we found surprised us. Pretty much there's only two major ways people are discovering videos right now. One is by going directly to video sites. Like someone types in YouTube, they go to YouTube. The other way is through blogs or really a variety of long tail venues. So the implications are threefold. One, it used to be that you'd find video when people emailed you and they said, hey, look at this video. Now, the biggest predictor of whether a video will go viral, of course, very few videos go viral, is whether or not it's being embedded on sites. So, and then kind of if you're trying to market a show or something and you're armed with that knowledge, you can go out and approach bloggers to try to get them to embed that video early in the video's life cycle.
Now, Brett Register, how have you found videos in the past? Did you discover them through different blogs or search? How did you go about finding videos that you wanted to watch?
I mean, when I first started, when I decided I wanted to do a web series and started without really figuring out what was going on, I just started searching Google for a web series. And the more I looked into it, the more I found sites like TubeFilter and New TV and things like that that really kind of did kind of an umbrella of all the web series. But for us specifically, as far as what TubeMogul is saying about blogs, it's totally true. Like we would, we'll look at our views and suddenly we'll have a big spike and we'll have to track it back to wherever it came from. And it's always some sci-fi blog that I've never heard of. I don't know if you know, but there's a huge sci-fi community on the web, and I think there's millions and millions of blogs, and it's like they all have their own specific audience and their own like niche that would enjoy our show but would never know about it. So it's really about like for us targeting those kind of smaller blogs. I mean, it's like a 1,000 viewers here or whatever, but because our show is scripted and it's episodic and it's harder to get people to come back each week. It's definitely important for us to find people outside of the already web-centered community, people that maybe don't know that this is going on but enjoy sci-fi. But for me specifically, it's big on word of mouth and blogs like the sci-fi blogs. Once I'm on there like promoting my own show, I usually find like two or three web series that I'm suddenly hooked on. And so, yeah, I mean, that's been the case for me.
Zach, what about you? Where do you discover new videos?
I discover new videos from Twitter, from friends, from I go to Dig a lot. As far as different shows, that's where I go to find different shows. Just basically random search. I stumble upon things. When you, Brett, were just saying, different blogs that hold the niche audience in different places like that. For people that are within your community, like I know for Bottles, Buds, and Brews, my thought when creating the show was, or I've been obsessed with discovering all these random drinks forever. Like I love going into a gas station and seeing a soda from yada, yada, yada. And like, you want to know about that. People, you know, you always go to these places and you're interested. And you're like, oh, what is this? What is this made out of? Why is it marketed this way? Why is the label this way? So when starting Bottles, Buns, and Brews, that is the mindset that I had. I was like, okay, well, let's bring and educate the masses on different things that they want to know about. When you think about it, like I saw you just smiling about that. Everyone is interested in the kind of drinks that they're drinking. Like everyone is into that. Like, you go to a smoothie place and you really look at the menu and you decide what's going to go inside of your drink. Like, everyone's interested in that. So it's sort of a broad niche, but there are people that are more hardcore. So you have to find those different places on the web. You have to find those communities that have 1,000 people here, 2,000, 3,000 people here, and you have to engage those communities. I wasn't engaged to find different shows on Digg, but I'm a very web-savvy person, and I'm going out seeking out these shows. People that are into this niche, they might not be as engaged as we are. They're not content producers like we are. You have to go and infiltrate those communities and let them know about what you're doing, because they're going to love the product that you're pushing out. If they're into it, they will love the product that you're pushing out. If you are totally 100% truthfully, like, into what you're doing, if you love the show that you're pushing and that you love the content that you're writing and you love all of that, people will see that and they will hop onto that bandwagon with you and they will watch your show regularly. And that's how we've been able to get people that are loyal. You know, I'm giving away tea on Twitter and we're just hanging out with friends on the internet, and you just have to build that community and nurture it, because in the end, that is all you're going to have, is that community.
Right, absolutely. I mean, we kind of worked backwards. We didn't understand that at first, and we definitely found out that you kind of have to go find, there's an audience out there, you just have to find them and kind of point them
right
in the
definitely
right direction.
Most definitely.
Yeah. Now, you guys bring up some interesting points in talking about Twitter and talking about infiltrating the community. And I think it's important to our listeners that we mention you don't want to do what's called a seagull. Do you guys know what a seagull is?
I do not.
No.
A seagull is when you come into somebody's blog, or you come into a chat room, or you come into a forum, or even on Twitter, and you crap on everybody, and then you leave. That's called a seagull.
That's not cool. You have, I just said, you have to nurture the community. You can't just go dump information on them and then get the hell out.
So
you have to nurture.
It's important to understand, you know, for those of you that are just getting into this and trying to market your own shows, it's really important to understand that you want to engage them the way Zach and Brett are talking about, but you also want to treat it like a cocktail party. You wouldn't just walk into a cocktail party and walk up to somebody and go, "Hey, I have a great new show. You need to check it out." Or, here's my real estate card. Here's my business card. And you'd be surprised how many people do that at different events that I go to. But you have to be really careful about that. Treat it like a cocktail party. Walk in, listen, understand what the conversation is before you say something that adds to the conversation.
Definitely.
If people like what you're saying, they'll go check out your profile. They'll see who you are. They'll go check out your site. And then they'll start asking you questions about your show.
There's definitely an etiquette to it. You can't just hop in and seagull them, as Tim Street so delicately put that.
Now, you also that's interesting that you say you find a lot of stuff through Twitter. And I'm curious, you know, I've heard that a lot of people say that Twitter is now hurting their blogging time, because what they would have wrote about on their blog, they're now writing on Twitter and linking to on Twitter. But I'm curious, when you find videos on Twitter, are you finding them at YouTube, or are you finding them embedded on somebody's blog?
That's an interesting point. When I find videos on Twitter, honestly, it's spread out. I can't honestly say that I'm finding mainly YouTube links, maybe Fiddler links, mainly Vimeo links, mainly blog embeds. I'm finding it's a mixture of everything, and Colleen has put up a picture of a seagull. I find videos in different places. I don't think that there is one. I don't think that everyone has it structured yet. I may have my videos embedded through our websites, because that comes the marketing branding standpoint of me, and Brett may have his that way. But regular people that are using the internet just for personal uses, and they're not making a business out of it, or they're not making a show or something, they may embed theirs in a totally different way. They may just link right to YouTube and not care about having their own blog or URL or thing like that. So it's a mixture.
Now, Brett,
for me,
I'm just curious.
Oh, sorry.
Brett Wilson, I'm curious, can you tell if anyone has a show where they get more views on their embed than they do at YouTube?
Yeah, absolutely. I think typically it's about 40% from the embed and 40% from the site itself. And that's part of the study, and part of the analytics we'll give you is, Here's for every view, here's where the video was embedded. I think what there are a couple things that surprised us about this study. One is that more views didn't come from Google and Yahoo, because previously we'd always been telling people you got to do your metadata right, your title tags, description, category, because people will find you. Well, of these 35 million streams, only 6% of those views came from search engines. Almost none of them came from video search engines. Then the other thing that surprised us was that social media was so small. I think it's 2% of the views we measured came from some sort of social media, whereas we would have thought Facebook and Bebo and sites like that would be driving views. Now, there's a lot of growth there. I think next time we do this study, that's going to be a much bigger chunk.
So then how were people finding the videos? Was it because they were featured on YouTube, or they were featured on a popular blog, and that blog did all the metadata?
Well, out of the subset, these 35 million views, about 40% of those, they went to YouTube or whatever site, Vimeo, Dailymotion, etc. They were on the site and just they either typed in something or they found a video in the related videos. The other 40% was a direct embed from a blog.
Interesting. I think the key to creating conversation and to create views and have people find your videos is simply that, is to produce content that creates conversation. The latest episode of Bottles, Buns, and Brews that we just released, actually just released it today, instead of reviewing a regular drink like we usually do on the show, something random, we reviewed the water from the Hudson River. We drank from the Hudson River. Because
nice.
let me just say, we're doing a promo on Bottles, Buns, and Brews called The Summer of Drink, and we thought, oh, let's go in different cities and try this new stuff, The Summer of Drink. We'll do something crazy. So why not drink from the Hudson River? Why not do something crazy to create conversation? And there you go from there. I mean, you have guest hosts on, you drink from the Hudson. You're giving people content that they can sink their teeth into, and they have a reason to tell their friends about. And it's not gimmicky, and it's not, look at me, look at me. It's, I love producing this content. Watch my show because this is why I do it, so you can be entertained.
There you go. Well, moving on to our next story. This is a video that's out there going viral right now, but it's an interesting story behind it called United Breaks Guitars. It's a music video. Apparently in, I guess, like the spring of 2008, a band called the Sons of Maxwell were traveling to Nebraska. And they're heading there for a one-week tour, and one of the guys in the band looked out the window of the airplane and saw his Taylor guitar was being tossed around by the United Airlines baggage handlers in Chicago, and his $3,500 guitar got damaged, and so he tried to get United to, make good on the situation, but he got the runaround. So he went and wrote a song about it. Not only did he write a song, he did a music video about it. Did you guys get a chance to check this out?
Yeah,
I read the article. I haven't seen the video yet, but Colleen's playing some video of it now, and it looks amazing.
The interesting thing that it makes me think about is, you know, as a brand, you've now got to deal with this. And at first, United Airlines wasn't dealing with it, but now they've stepped in and they've talked to the guy, and this has made the rounds in the media. And I'm curious what you guys think, how brands should approach this type of thing, because obviously this guy went to all the channels that he thought he could at United, and then customer service broke down. Brett Register, what are you thinking about this?
I mean, this is not the first case that I've heard like this, and I'm wondering when brands are going to realize they should just take care of it to start with. I mean, the internet is... reaches almost every single person in the world at this point, and it's so easy for something like this to happen and go viral and just kind of put a sour taste in a lot of people's mouths about your brand. And it's just, for me, the customer service, it needs to be there to start with. I mean, everybody has a terrible airplane story where their luggage got lost or damaged or whatever, so everyone immediately relates to this. I mean, airlines and everyone, I think, like, Best Buy was the last one that had kind of a similar situation. They just, they got to be above it and be faster to respond to something like this. I mean, they damaged the guitar. He paid to have it on the airline, assuming that it would be taken care of. So, I mean, it's their fault. They should have taken care of it to start with. And, you know, if it's a negative feedback for them, then, you know, I mean, this is just one more case that hopefully will be, you know, let other brands look at this and go, oh, we shouldn't do that. And, you know, hopefully, you know, in a perfect world, everyone will take care of everything for the fear of a viral video, you know, taking down their brand. But, I mean, it's just like, it's so easy to get your voice heard on the internet these days that you can't let those things slide. And especially as a gigantic brand as they are, they have to be looking out for their brand. I mean, there's a lot of airlines and there's a lot of negativity towards certain airlines, and it doesn't take much to go, oh, I'm just not going to fly that anymore. And it, you know, I mean, it may not take down their company, but it's definitely going to hurt them more than if they had just taken care of the guitar to start with. And that's kind of the whole point of this. It's just like you pay a little bit so you don't have to go, you know, do a lot of damage control once this video hits.
Zach?
I think that Brett hit a lot of good points there. Just touching real quick before I touch into that, guys, people that are flying, when you're packing precious cargo, please. My friend Brian Brushwood, who hosts the show on Revision 3 Scam School, he travels and tours a lot. He's got a big case full of awesome magical gear, and he has a little sign that when you open the lid and it says, "Dear TSA agents, yada, 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 please respect my magical goods. I respect your TSA goodness." Something along the lines of that. It's and when I carry my bags, you know, you pack a press kit and everything, so just to make sure stuff doesn't get tossed around. That being said, different brands like Cisco and different brands like United Airlines, they're all going online and they're watching their Twitter feed. They're smart. I know Starbucks searches themselves every day and they get who knows how many thousand. I forget the number. It was really high up there. At replies on Twitter. Basically, what I'm saying is all of these huge brands are web conscious now. It's not 2006, it's not 07, it's not the beginning of Twitter, it's not the beginning of IM and social bookmarking and sharing. Right now, it is the time where everyone is aware of what's happening. Maybe it's not as much as it could be, but it's pretty high up there. So all these brands are watching what they're doing on the web, and they, you know, you have to be smart and not pull a Best Buy and, you know, sell a thumb drive for $50 when it's $10 online. You can't screw people like that, because there will be backlash. It will be socially bookmarked on Dig, and people will talk about it. And that's just part of being a brand in this new landscape. You have to protect yourself and make sure that you don't look stupid in public.
You know, one of the interesting things about this story is that United Airlines has made good on it, and not only that, they're going to be using this video as a training video to show their employees what not to do.
That's amazing.
I think that's a really great way to handle
that. That's a story of United Airlines flipping it and making it positive press for them, and that's awesome. And I'm glad that they did this. Yeah,
absolutely. Yeah.
Brett Wilson, I'm curious, have you had anyone, any brands come to you and go, hey, how can we squash this video, or what can we do? I mean, has anyone come to you for emergency brand help yet?
No, most of the brands we deal with are pretty avant-garde, and I really relate to what Zach just said. I mean, these same social media tools that some brands are worried about, other brands have said, this is great. We can control these conversations. If someone complains about us via Twitter, we can go solve it. And they're going to tweet again saying, hey, United just reached out to me. They saw my tweet. This is great. They solved my problem. So I think these social media tools actually give smart brands a real edge, because previously, if you pissed off a consumer, you may not know it. You may not have a way to fix it. Now, not only can you fix it and get ahead of it, but the same people are going to broadcast it to their friends. I think all of us understand that brands and companies make mistakes, and we're sympathetic to that. So I'd like to see more people, like Zach said, monitoring their Twitter feeds, looking at social media as an opportunity to impress people.
There you have it. Well
said.
Well said. You know, it is interesting to see how, you know, we're kind of lucky being on the in this bubble, in that we get to experience this as it develops. It'll be interesting to see how they do it and how they manage it as it grows. I mean, right now it's much like a town square, and in that town square, it's just like, you know, small town America was. If somebody had a problem, they could run out into the town square and start yelling it and let everybody else know. And that's kind of what these social networks are a little town square.
Don't complain about your job in the town square.
yeah. Be really careful what you say about brands, especially if you want them to sponsor your show in the future. It may come back to haunt you. That about wraps it up for this week. Zach, where can people get a hold of you?
I was just about to say that. I want to make sure to get all of my fellow co-hosts here on Twitter, because I want to follow you guys. You're very interesting, stimulating ideas.
Likewise.
You can find me on Twitter. I'm just at Zach Louie. My last name's spelt really weird. ZACKLUYE. And you can also go there, ZachLouie.com, to find my blog and stuff like that. Bottles, Blends, and Brews for my web show, and Adagio.com for the tea shows that I do.
Brett Register, where can people get a hold of you?
They can find the show at thecrew.tv, and I'm on Twitter. It's just Brett Register. I think it's somewhere over here. Yep. Brett Register with two T's, and I Twitter a lot, unfortunately.
And Brett Wilson?
I'm at... TubeMogul.com, not T-Mobile, but TubeMogul, TubeMogul.com. I'm on Twitter at TubeMogul, and my email, if you still use email, is Brett with two T's at TubeMogul.com.
And I'm Tim Street. You can find me at OneTimStreet.com, is where I blog about online video. And that about does it for this week in media. We'll see you next week. Daisy will still be on vacation. That's it. Over and out.